Water.
Earth.
Fire.
Air.
Welcome to Bending the Elements.
A production by the Novice Elitist Podcast.
With your hosts, Caleb and Isaac.
Podcast about all things Avatar.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, those in between and affiliated, March 4th to victory. And today we have with you on Bending the Elements, and obviously this podcast, we have Caleb and myself. We're going to be discussing the next Netflix episode of Avatar Last Airbender, Warriors.
Yeah, Warriors. Our second time around, we're going to be doing that same format that we did last time, which is more of a general discussion rather than scene by scene, walking through it. And I guess, would you like to open up the conversation here by giving me your are you feeling this one kind of thing?
I don't know if I want to say I'm feeling it, but I also know fully well know if I would say I'm not feeling it either. So I'm indecisive. I have not reached a verdict.
Yeah, I guess to try to help you feel around this a little bit more, do you have a best thing and a worst thing for this episode?
I think my best thing is the little character interactions between Sokka, Katara, and Aang. There's little bits where I did have a smile on my face. Worst thing, I will say, might be Kyoshi, but not for the reasons you think. I will allow myself to explain all this, but first, what are you feeling, Caleb? You're feeling it or not feeling it about this episode?
If the previous episode left me kind of still mostly in the neutral category, but leaning positive, this is hard to explain. I'm picturing a graph in my head, but I'm still have one foot in the neutral category, but this one is bringing me more to the positive. I think that there, if I was to give a best thing, worst thing, I think maybe there's two things that I could consider my best thing for this one. The first one is, I mentioned the previous episode that I thought that I liked Sokka the best of this crew. I felt like he had an energy that I liked, and his romance with Suki in this one, I think it was surprisingly charming, and I did have a smile on my face and a number of points with that too. I was like, oh, okay, I'm liking this. And I think we discussed in book three, we're kind of like, oh, we both really like Suki, but we feel like they're not really giving her enough ground for her to stand on her own. She feels like she's kind of just there to be Sokka's girlfriend. And I wish that we had a little bit more for her. And so watching this episode, I was kind of thinking like, if we do get to book three and they bring her along, I feel like they could do more with her here and maybe feel at her character a little bit more. So I was liking some of that. And to my surprise, even though some of the changes when it comes to the character of Zhao, by the end of this episode, I was kind of like, you know what? I like this different change where instead he's just this little like opportunist, little slimy guy who is at the bottom of the rung and just looking for his chance to climb up. I think that gives some room for another interesting development for that character. So, and plus, I just really enjoy the actor, Ken Lun, I think is how you say his name. And so I was happy to see him being in there. I think he was pretty charming in that role, too. So, but if I was to say my worst thing, I'd honestly agree with you. There was just something about the Kyoshi. I think I mentioned in the previous episode that there were times when the show felt a little bit like it was like Avatar cosplay. And for whatever reason, just the imagery didn't really translate to live action super well. And it was specifically when we saw Kyoshi as the Avatar State, her doing her actions and doing her bending, where I was kind of like, oh, something about this just, it feels a little bit like it did not translate well to live action. And even some of her speeches to Aang in the Avatar State, just kind of bland forest, didn't really look like a cool location. Where I was just kind of like, I'm not really liking her energy. Something about it just doesn't quite connect right to what I would really want this character to be for Aang and for herself. So yeah, I wasn't necessarily feeling that either.
Well, to start things off, unfortunately, the show had to tie themselves once again to the Shyamalan movie. Just in the, they hired a veteran Shyamalan actor.
Oh, who's this? Maybe I'm not remembering.
Yeah, Zhao.
I forgot that he was in Old, right? I think that was the one that he was in.
Okay, obviously I jest. I'm being sarcastic when I say like veteran Shyamalan actor, but still.
Oh, I didn't remember that. Oh, wow, that's funny.
So they couldn't help, but now I could. Now there's a connection. They've done now. If it wasn't just a connection, for the, I guess, same franchise, they now just like, crossed over and just had to like make their show tied to even more to Shyamalan there. So like, good job, guys.
Oh, I was more thinking of him and Dan De Kim being in Lost. Both actors who I first kind of discovered in Lost and really liked him, liked both of them in that show. So I was happy to see both of them show up here.
I don't know what network it's on, but there is now a show called Found, which I'm like, hey, the sequel to Lost.
That's funny. But so, yeah, we're both coming in a little bit more positive this time around, it sounds like. And I guess maybe we should jump into some of the details a little bit more.
Now, hold on a second. I didn't say more positive. I just like, I guess I was warming up to the characters. But I didn't say, it doesn't mean like I overall, I'm just like, oh, yeah, like, I'm still just like, okay.
Well, like I said, a little bit more positive. Not necessarily you're on board, you're wearing your signs of I love this program. It's maybe the doors open up a little bit more for it for you.
We start off with, don't worry, I'm not going plot point by plot point. It's just like what came to my head. I guess I like Zuko declaring, obviously, behind Aang's back, that Aang is a coward.
Yeah, and I did like to see his whole kind of blow up in the first place. He's like tearing apart his room. I was like, oh, here's the usual Zuko type. This guy, he's just...
Where's my book?
Yeah. Can't contain himself.
I gotta find that book or else and get back to the library or the librarian's gonna rip my head off.
Hey, oh, we'll find out about maybe a librarian later. But I did like, there's just Iroh in the corner just calmly trying to talk him down and being like, you should be trying to think more logically. We can figure this out. Maybe we can still have an advantage. You don't need to just act like a little baby throwing stuff around here. So I thought they handled that scene well. I thought I liked that little introduction. And then we do see that Aang and Katara going through that book. And I was kind of surprised. I was even wondering, is this going to be a thing that pops up like every other episode where, oh, we just read this thing in Zuko's journal. What are we going to do next? I was like, I don't know about that.
I don't know if it'll have his inner thoughts and... he's pouring his heart out into the journal itself, not just, with all the information on the avatar, but I wonder if there will be entries that he wrote down on his feelings, keeping a journal, and if Aang will start reading said entries and have sympathy for him.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah. I will be curious to see how they develop that dynamic.
Who wrote this episode?
It was Joshua Hale Fialkov, I think. I've never heard that last name before. But I'd never really seen anything that he's done. He's worked on a couple things, one-off episodes here or there, some Marvel stuff, and Afro Samurai Resurrection was the only notable thing that I was like, hey, there you go.
Holy smokes, that's a deep dive. Holy crap.
Yeah, he was the writer of that. So
now, if I may ask you, what of the... Well, I guess we have to... Okay, this is a sentence. Oh, yeah, I guess Momo gets introduced, doesn't he? Forgot about that, right? Yeah, Momo is introduced in this episode.
Yeah, I guess that's something to talk about. We do spend a little bit more time in the Southern Air Temple, and yeah, we do discover Momo. And I will say, I mentioned in the previous episode that I thought that the chimeric beasties at this point were a little bit more creepy than cute, and I wasn't really happy with it. I would say Momo lands somewhere in the middle. I don't think he's creepy, but he's just not quite cute yet. Maybe they will find it as the series goes on and find ways to make him a little bit cuter. But here, I just think the CGI-ness of his, especially his eyes, is just in some way off-putting. I don't know what it is.
I agree. It's, you know what, because I obviously saw episode 3, so I'm obviously not going to say anything for episode 3 until we get to that. But, oh, this series is like reminding me of Once Upon a Time all over again. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's...
Oh, really?
That's unfortunate, but yeah. No, you'd be surprised. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I think I'm jumping to conclusions a little too early. Sorry about that. But the reason I mentioned Momo, I pretty much agree with you on, yes, the CGI is not rendered in fully. Again, I don't just want to say I prefer the animated stuff. Like, I guess, well, it is animated. Duh.
There you go.
Sorry. I guess I just prefer like the hand-drawn, like, you know, 2D stuff that they were doing in 2005.
Yeah, and I mean, again, if anyone goes back and listens to our prior episodes, we commented just constantly how much we love Momo just on the in the corner of the frame, just doing something silly. That is just such a cute piece of design. And so I'd like that character to also fill in that role here too. I'd love to be able to just see Momo doing something in the background and just love it. And yeah, maybe we'll see if they manage to do that with this design as we go on.
It would be impossible. It wouldn't be a thing. But the only way I could see it working is if I saw like Zabumafu, as the puppet. Because I always loved like Zabumafu as the puppet, as well as like, you know, the actual.
That's fair.
But again, it's puppetry, and I love puppetry. I think you like puppetry more than I do, but like, it's at least tangible. That's the thing. Could you imagine if the guys who did what was it called? Not Labyrinth, the other one, Dark Crystal Resistance.
Yeah, Age Resistance.
Age Resistance. Thank you. Yeah, if you had those guys come in and do all the Chimeric Beasts.
Oh man.
Oh man. Oh boy. Oh man. We'd have a show on our hands now. That would actually. Okay, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I'll say I was actually thinking quite a bit. I was like, oh, if only they could have got some of the crew that's doing the Star Wars stuff. I feel like they've still been able to create cool and pretty designs. To be fair, those are movies and maybe their budgets are just a bit, you know, they can dedicate more time to that stuff.
200 million, unless you're talking about television shows. Sorry, I thought you were talking about like the movies, like $200 million.
Yeah, movies and I guess with the TV shows, they have been doing more what you're talking about, which is bringing in puppets. There's a ton of puppetry in those Disney shows.
That's true. The child is in those like Mandalorian shows. I believe he is a puppet.
Yeah, Grogu, but tons and tons of other little random little guys you'd see in the corner of the frame. They'll just throw puppetry in there.
This is like so down a rabbit hole. I get that, but hang on a second. Weren't you under oath? I say under oath, but weren't you famously saying that in the sequel series again? I don't know if the TV shows count as a sequel series, but weren't you saying that the sequel series, you're not exactly as impressed with the alien designs as you were with the originals?
Yeah, no, I think that I'd be curious to go back to see those movies again and see if that still stands. But yeah, that's how I felt when we did it back in 2020.
Hint for, yeah, and I guess next year or something like that on the other channel. Anyway, sorry, I derailed that. But anyway,
yes,
sorry.
Yeah, we've gone off.
Apologies. Yeah. Nothing on the artists and programmers and designers who did this. It's just, again, you guys did a lot of hard work to get that there. But at the end of the day, yeah, I guess I don't want to just say like it doesn't suck. It's just like it's kind of obvious. And well, yeah, if I had to look at, you know, Momo from the original series to this one, it's like, well, I obviously prefer like the other because he looks a lot more cute and I guess natural.
Was Momo in the M. Night movie?
Yep. Well, see, there you go. He was barely in it.
Did it look okay there? I can't remember it at all in that.
I think he was, maybe, I don't know if they did anything practical, but from what I recall, like he was briefly there. Maybe he only had like 4 or 5 minutes of screen time at the most. And I mean like throughout the entire, like, you know, hour and 30 minute film.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. No wonder I can't remember.
I could be wrong on that. Yeah, he was like barely there because like they just go to the Southern Air Temple and that, and then he just shows up. Like no mention of like, oh, this guy's been deceased for 100 years.
Yeah, but I was just, you know, they clearly are wanting to go for like a grounded, like realistic quality. But I feel like they could have maybe amped up the cartooniness of the chimeric beasties to make them have that more cute effect. But maybe we're spending too much time on Momo.
Well, I'm just also now thinking of like, golly, what would Jim Henson do if he like was, because I'm just also thinking of like TMNT and it's like, how did those suits work? Sorry.
Yeah.
The reason I derailed this, I'm sorry, didn't mean to go along this long, but the reason I brought up Momo initially was the scroll.
Oh yeah. That's actually a turn that I don't mind either. just simplifying things a little bit, that Gran had it all along, but it was hidden because waterbenders would be targets of the Fire Nation. So she snuck it in there.
It is that explanation sound for you? Are they covering their bases, or is it an excuse in universe? Don't worry. I am not pointing at it because they did it differently. I'm just like, do you think in universe, the logic is sound?
I think it works well enough. It seemed like maybe it should have been hidden somewhere, maybe outside of their camp, like in a cave somewhere, maybe. But
you know what would be funny is if she hid it inside that dilapidated Fire Nation ship.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. Yeah.
Because,
And it would have been there all along when Katara was training in there and just never knew. That would be kind of funny. Yeah.
Again, but do you think that Katara herself was, should justify some, I'm not saying vitriolic, like, rage or anything like that, but I wonder if she should have been a little bit like maybe peeved off, just like, hang on a second, why did she not tell me this? And like, at least, I'm not trying to sow seeds of discontent or division or anything like that. I'm just like wondering if the character herself would have been a little bit like, oh, this was here the whole time? Like, come on, Grandma, what the hey?
Well, I think she understood. I think she made it clear in the previous episode that she understood that she was in a way putting people at risk by doing this. She just couldn't help it because it was in a way like her calling.
Well, it's not even that. It's like part of herself, for Pitt's sakes. It's natural for her. Whereas like everybody else, it's, well, not, because they just don't have that ability. It's so tied to her. Like, you can't just, tell somebody to, you can definitely see what a metaphor for and or an allegory for bending may also be, but it's like, it's a part of her. She needs to keep doing it. Obviously her, like, I'm happy that they didn't. Well, that's the thing. I was forcing jeepers. That's a whole other issue that I just realized for another allegory. But if you know what I'm saying with a certain, I'm not going there, but yeah, just to not inhibit and, keep it under wraps. Like, good grief. I'm glad that wasn't the case, but fair enough. Maybe I'm, again, only going by the show's logic, just not no comparisons, just going by what the show is giving me.
Yeah, and I also like the element of them using that as her reason for not wanting to go back. When Sokka's like, okay, we got the Avatar to danger, it's time to go back home. And she's like, oh, back home I felt like I had to hide this part of myself and I had no way to advance. But out here I'm flourishing, and how can I go back when I just opened up the door to this part of myself? So I thought that worked as well for that dynamic.
Well, that was the other thing where I was a little confused. Great, now we're literally like going almost plot point by plot point. I'm sorry. but there's, I was a little bit, I'll say confused, because maybe, again, it's just the way they delivered it, and that's not on the actor, just maybe how I interpreted it. It was more like, Sokka was all in episode one. Episode two, it's like, and we're going back. It's like, huh? But you said, like, you're to your bud there, it's like, you're in charge. So it's like, it seems like it was a permanent decision.
That's fair. I don't know, maybe no comment, maybe I don't know what to I'm not sure.
I'm just misunderstood, so I just assumed that they were going on forward, so I was very confused when Sokka said that. But let's move on. I'd like the bit where Aang logistically would have taken too long, so it's, I guess, I don't want to call favoritism, but he at least gave Gyatso a proper burial.
Yeah. And I thought his little scene kind of saying goodbye, I thought that worked well enough. But I also, just before we move away completely from Momo, I did like that immediately Sokka took a disliking to Momo, and that Momo immediately targets him. And we'll see if they continue that dynamic as we go along. But that's at least a bit that they brought over that I always enjoyed.
At each other's throats, always, racing and being, competitive over food. Especially later on in Kyoshi Village, or Koshi Island,
Yeah.
By the way, did they do that where they had the title cards at all?
Yeah, or it said, warriors?
Yeah, not just that, but, in each location,
Oh, that. No, I think they only did that for the first episode. It's just like establishing the world kind of thing.
Probably should have kept doing that anyway, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never really liked that. I never felt like it was needed. You just put it in dialogue, but it's just, it's just a stylistic thing that people do these days. But I liked the market scene. So Iroh and Zuko arrive at this market, and Iroh's like, oh, we can get some information here. We just need to be kind of subtle about our intentions. We can feel around and see if there's anything unusual going on. And while he's kind of explaining this to Zuko, he's getting distracted by all this food around. And I like that in the middle of kind of encouraging Zuko, he's like, what you really need is sticky rice. And he runs off and gets it. I was like, okay, this is starting to work more for me too. I'm enjoying that kind of side of him coming out, the actor.
I guess, yeah, we're getting, I guess, more used to the role. That is true. Like, as we go forward, I think maybe I probably will warm up to all these guys' performances, as you said. But it will be interesting to see at what point, if however they develop the characters. With Iroh especially, it'll be interesting to see that actor, and I'll be very interested to see his performance when we see, like, the real Iroh, if you know what I mean.
No, I'm curious what you mean. If you mean like much later.
Sorry. Okay. So I don't mean later, but like, for instance, when he has to use violence, or at least he has to use force.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to see, like, when the, you know, gloves are off and it becomes no holds barrel and he has to fight. Like, I'll be sure off like his playful fighting stance, but when the chips are down and he has to fight, I will be very interested to see, like, I'm like anticipating and excited to see how the actor is going to like portray that stuff.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But I guess speaking of fighting and rising to an occasion. Yeah. So what do we think about the introduction of the Kyoshi warriors, in particular, Suki? How do you think that translated to live action with just the look of them and Suki in general?
The costumes look authentic. I can't really complain there.
Yeah, I like the makeup too. I think it has a good pop to it in live action.
I was a little bit disappointed by the end bit in the end fight on the raid on their village, where unfortunately she was makeup less, and so we only saw her face without the makeup, and I was like, oh, come on, she's naked again. Come on, get that like makeup on her.
Yeah, I did think that was a little bit unfortunate. Like, I got why she took it off when she did, but I was like, oh, maybe we could have pushed that up into more like the middle of the episode, so she could have had the makeup on in the end. But what can you do, I guess.
Hey, by the way, do you think, like, I gotta be careful how I say this, do you think the whole like bell joke was a euphemism for something?
I don't know what you're going with there.
Well, either way, I'm just gonna say it's a way better joke than the sneakers joke from Black Panther, because I still am wrapping my head around that joke.
Yeah. Well, we'll discuss that. In a couple of years.
one day, seriously. I suppose they translated from the original series. They pretty much, I'm not gonna say verbatim, but they did their own thing with it, but it was basically like the same story they gave to Suki. But what is it that they added more to this versus, you know, the original version?
I think really it's the chemistry between the two actors and the nuance between the actress playing Suki. She just has a lot of really great kind of side expressions and could just really sell a pathos there that was in the character, but I just feel like becomes more fleshed out with just her performance of it. And again, I think her chemistry with Sokka is really cute and awkward. Like, when she's trying to flirt with him by being like, oh, you're a warrior as well. Well, let's kind of prove our worth. Like, let's have a little physical combat. Let's do a little throwing battle. And she thinks it's going well as she conquers, you know, Sokka and shows that she's a superior warrior. She looks all like pleased, like, oh, like, aren't you impressed by me? But then he's just more like off-put and walks away, and she's just confused. I think that little moments like that really sell the internal quality of the character that maybe I didn't always feel was present in the animated show.
Not going to say anything about that rear naked choke she put on him. I suppose that is the case. I think as well, maybe the addition of her mother. That probably, I think, helped as well. We didn't really have, like, we had the male village leader, I guess, in the original. But I guess to have a conclusive force, even if the character, not the actor, but the character was kind of cliched, and the village leader who doesn't want Aang here, yeah, there were moments where she was justified, don't get me wrong, and she wasn't, there's was no sinisterness, just she preferred to be impartial to the war and not have for the sake of the village's survival, to not have outsiders come in and be burdened or at least cause mischief. I can understand where she was coming from. But yeah, I guess the nuance there. And really did at least sell me that, yeah, Suki is very similar to Sokka. That's, I think, another like reason there. Not meant for each other, but where the attraction there could come from, that they are like, you know, two people from like a small village.
Yeah, and two people who had responsibility put on them at a very young age. So, like, I imagine it's harder to relate with men in her village when they would see her as like an authority figure in a way, and a creepy violence enactor. I did also like the awkward moment when she comes to tell Sokka that there's dinner waiting for them. And he's there kind of showering and she's just staring at his body and until the point where he has to like cover it up. And he's like, oh, like, what are you doing there? And she realizes her awkwardness and just quickly walks away. So, yeah, definitely maybe not experienced dating this Suki here.
No, that is the case. I wonder how that often happens. But anyway, no, I mean, that's good for her, at least that it goes both ways, where it's not just, you know, thankfully Sokka's not looking at her leery-eyed or anything like that, but I guess the leery-eyed tables have turned where she's like kind of looking at him in a very veneer kind of way, or voyeur way, almost, not veneer, voyeur.
And I wonder if she was just like so stunned by him, like, oh, I've never really looked at a man like this before, and then realized like, oh no, maybe I shouldn't be looking like this, and quickly runs away.
I mean, you know, it is that age for her, potentially. She does look like a teenager, so I mean, I wouldn't put it past her. So it's definitely the time for kids by that point to discover themselves.
Yeah, that's true.
And that is a thing that I not to, you know, put to episode 3 either and bring that in here, but that is definitely something where it's like, you know, yeah, these kids definitely feel like kids.
Yeah, I like that element too. Yeah. Unlike, I don't want to spend too much time bashing Damn Night Movie, but there was just an element of artificiality there where I couldn't necessarily feel the real kid element in them. I mean, it was there, but I mean, I don't know.
There is a trade-off, though. Maybe I'll save it for the next episode, but there's a trade-off when it comes to believability in the fight scenes.
Yeah, and I thought they did a solid job in this one when... because I guess moving to the end, we see Aang enter into the spirit world and he's kind of distracted as all this battling's about to begin. And Katara realizes that, oh no, Aang's not going to wake up and Zuko's about to come get him. She's like, okay, I guess I have to go deal with this. I thought the actress there handled it in a believable way. She was like, oh, like, there's no one else to do this. It's only me, but I'm clearly not capable of this. And so she's almost just standing there just to be someone in the way. And they don't try to portray it as she's suddenly a skilled bender who could take on Zuko and very quickly get swept aside. I thought that they handled the believability of it there well. But yeah, I guess we'll see as we go along if they can manage to keep that up.
There's that, but maybe I'll save it for like next episode, but I guess we're with Kyoshi. So in place of Roku, again, don't worry, just stating what we already know. Place of Roku, we have Kyoshi be the first avatar to, I guess, have Aang. And it makes sense. I believe it actually is smart for them to do that, given that they're on Kyoshi Island. But it would seem as though, or not just that, the beginning of the in episode 1, the opening where we see the avatar demonstrate, you know, each, you know, of the styles. She is the one to do that, I believe. And I believe she is also the one to speak and narrate the show's opening.
Yeah, so I do wonder if this is going to be like the end of us seeing her here, if she's going to continue to be a big influence going forward. And again, I would maybe prefer it if she wasn't. I don't know if it's the actress, but I don't know. I was not necessarily warming to the energy that she was putting on screen. And when she actually took over Aang's body, and it's like, I'll show you what the Avatar state is, and like became him in a way, but not him, you know, just the regular Aang, but speaking from her voice. It was actually her physical form there. I was like, oh, this is a weird turn. I did not expect this to happen. But
episode eight of book 1, Water, was the Avatar Roku, I believe, or the Winter Solstice, whichever one. I forget which one it was called, but that one where, if you probably don't remember this, but it was where it was a brilliant chase. It was a brilliant chase for race against time for Aang to get to Fire Temple Island and, you know, get into the chamber where the statue of Roku is just during the winter solstice to get a chance to meet him. And finally gets in there and the whole place is surrounded on the outside. And, you know, Aang's like, I don't got a plan. And then Roku's like, watch this. And briefly takes over Aang's body and demonstrates an ostentatious, like, move of power. And it's so great. It's so awesome. It was an excellent episode. And so they did that in this one instead. I'll say it didn't, like, I think it probably would get a lot of people's blood pumped up. But, okay, here's where I'm going to be a little bit like, here's my negative. Or at least here's what I was doing. So, Caleb, let's go over what Kyoshi discusses with Aang. I suppose she is a little bit similar to her counterpart. They definitely add in some of that backstory, I think, from those novels of hers, or maybe they just made up some of that stuff for her, where she was like an orphan and then she came. It doesn't seem like she moved Kyoshi Island. Like, she didn't separate it from the continent. It seems like it was already existing here.
Yeah, I got the same impression there as well. Yeah.
But that's that again. Don't worry, rhetoric. I'm not meaningless. What I was referring to, though, is, you know, the speech that she makes regarding the Avatar state and at least, you know, what the role of the Avatar is.
Yeah. I think I know what you're getting at. I remember some of this from before. Yeah.
Yep. What exactly does she say?
Well, she talks a little bit about how, you know, the Avatar state is under control. It's a combination of all the past Avatars trying their energy through him. And as the Avatar, you need to put aside your own kind of self, your own desires, and just serve your duty. You need to be a mighty merciless warrior, she says, is what you need to be as the Avatar. So I think that ties into what you're going to say here.
Merciless. Merciless, you say. Showing no mercy or pity. So she, you know, possesses Aang's body. That's fine. That's, again, whatever. She shows up Avatar style or Iron Man style and shows up in the center of the village as Zhao and Prince Zuko are there. And what happens? Like, she, you know, does a power tornado or whatever with all the elements. And what does she do? She leaves all the firebenders alive.
Yep.
I know you guys can't see me right now, but I'm just like shake my head. I'm shaking my head. Tisk, tisk, tisk. That was not a statement that you should have been making. That was not just a boast. That was a manifesto. It is as Grand Moff Tarkin said in Rogue One, where Krennic wanted to blow up the entire like planet of Jedha. And obviously,
Grand Moff?
Yeah. Tarkin was against this idea. It's like, we want a mission statement, not a manifesto. No. She should have shown who was boss, and I don't think she was backing up her words. I don't think her statement meant anything. Because that actually messes with Aang, I think, even further down the line, in like the long run. By doing this, now they're going to come at him with a force, and Aang's not ready for this yet. Aang is still not ready. Kyoshi just kind of like, if she's the pinnacle of what bending is, like, if we just literally saw like the ceiling of what, like, you know, power is in this world, well, goodness gracious me, like, Aang's got a lot of, like, you know, he's gonna be having to train a lot more harder. And again, it also could have worked the other way, where she did mercilessly kill Zuko or Zhao in that instance. It sends a message out, and it also gives Aang maybe some angst. I don't say, not that he needs it, but just like, of like, what have I done? And then it works for his character to avoid that and say like, all right, well, that's Kyoshi, but I'm a different Avatar. And then he, like, you know, tries to get a little bit more creative, with, like, you know, how he approaches a fight.
Yeah. And I do wonder if maybe that's some of the reason that I felt like just her energy was off. Like, almost immediately when she first speaks to Aang, she's got this kind of a aggressive quality towards him. Like, oh, like, you've been shirking off your abilities or shirking off your responsibilities.
Oh, she, like, straight up, you know, kind of insults him and berates him for being frozen in the ice for 100 years.
Yeah, even though, again, this is not the same as in the animated series where he ran away. It was just him going off to think in just bad luck that he got. So he never shirked his responsibilities. In fact, almost immediately when he came back and realized. And so it just makes her come off as just being unfair. And then, yeah, her whole mantra is, you need to be just like a cold tool of battling these guys. Her whole mantra is, only justice will bring peace. But yet for these representatives of people who are, you know, trying to bring some injustice to her island, she just kicks them out. It feels a little like it doesn't quite fit with what she was going for there.
She didn't back up her statements. And again, this is nothing on like, you know, I'm not mad at the change in the, I don't care. It's just what the show gave me. I shake my head. So definitely not feeling that.
Yeah, like we said, we both kind of agree that, yeah, that's maybe some of the worst stuff in this episode. Yeah, but I feel like there's still enough in here that I can just kind of, you know, not necessarily look past, but just kind of be like, okay, that's not something that I want to focus on. That's the weak stuff. And I feel like there's much more screen time put to the stuff that I enjoy, which is the Suki and Sokka dynamic.
So what do you wish to talk about with Zhao?
Well, one, I like that right from the start, he just senses an opportunity when he's like, oh, like, I'm sure he recognizes right away who this person is that he's dealing with. And so he starts thinking like, okay. And then once Zuko and Iroh leaves the scene, he brings in one of his underlings and like, okay, quickly investigate this. Like, this is something that we need to be right on top of. And I do like that he even kind of looks like he's just like a shabby dude. Like, he isn't someone who's super well put together like the Zhao in the series was. He's someone who's just been just scraping by. And now he feels like he's got a chance to climb his way to the top. I think that's just a different and cool dynamic that I like to see. And he's like on the edge of the empire too, like the butt end, and just sees this golden opportunity.
You know, the old, like, stereotypical joke, or the cliche joke, excuse me, about, like, the one of the workers being sent, relocated to Antarctica?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
That's Zhao in this one. So that's, no, that makes sense. He has plenty of ambition. I get that. You know, I could see that when you're in a very, like, menial job or whatever. You have like ambition because all you can do is just look at the top, like a way out basically. And so he sees that opportunity with Zuko and Iroh. So,
no.
Oops, slipped the tongue there. But I will say I was actually happy because way back, back in, you know, original series, I had said, it kind of would have made more sense if Zhao was the one to kind of be the goon to like, or send his goons out to, you know, raid these villages instead of it being Zuko. I know that may like take away from Zuko's care, but it was already taken away from Zuko, where he was just like this, you know, standard generic, like, and I'm the bad guy. But it's like, if it's Zhao, it at least, I guess, it at least saves face with Zuko, and it gives, I guess, more of a reason for Zhao to be a presence in this season if he was only there for book one. Obviously, we didn't know at the time. But so I'm at least happy that he initiated the strike and he was the one that went in there instead of Zuko being the one to go in there like, burn the village down.
Oh, and I like that scene too, where, yeah, he doesn't have that kind of smugness. He comes in, he's like, oh, you know, what a lovely village you have here. I can see why you'd want people to stay out of it. And if you want us to stay out of it, then you should hand over that guy they know that you have. I feel like he had a certain charm to it too, even though you can feel that bluntness underneath. Thread that's dressed up a little bit nicely. I just like that bit.
I guess there was some passive aggressiveness intentionally, of course.
Yeah.
As we talk, it is a very different interpretation of Zhao, but yeah, I guess that's not a bad one. Could be like a different character potentially, but yeah, I'm just thinking back to like the original one who was so proud and so boastful of like his position and oh, how he wanted to like spit in the face of Zuko, but again, was passive aggressive about it.
Yeah, and I feel like I don't mind that they're not trying to just repeat that because I feel like it was just so well done already. So I don't mind them giving us a different kind of flavor for that character.
Agreed. No, look at it from like a different perspective, even if it may just be a new character entirely. Yeah, no, I think that's the right way to go about it. I will just say, though, we have yet to see an Egni Kai duel. So I do wonder if there will be a point in either this part, whatever you want to call it, it's not called book, whatever, this this start of whatever we're calling it, of when if Zuko and Zhao will have a duel. I am definitely looking forward to see if that will happen or occur.
Yeah, and I also liked at the end when he just immediately betrays Zuko too. Once Zuko's like, hey, we need to keep this secret, you can see on his face the wheels start turning, like, oh, this is my chance to even get it over on the prince here. I can use this to boost my position even more. And immediately he goes and starts writing off a letter, and oh, I couldn't believe this. I was so happy. I don't know if you were pleased to see this as well. That we get a return of everyone's favorite little side player that would show up every now and again. It's Haki. Oh boy, I was like, hey, it's Haki on the screen. I'm happy to see that. So
he's been biding his time. He knew something we didn't, I tell you. Even all the way back then, he still knew, like, oh yeah, no, like I'll be coming back there, buds. Yeah, no, they're gonna make a live action series. I tell you what, I guarantee you, I'm gonna be a part of it.
Yeah, his first live action appearance. This is, yeah, there we go. Oh yeah, and Daniel Day Kim we see at the end too, is the Fire Lord Ozai. So
again, there was like, I'm not saying no way, but it's like, yeah, I don't know how you would have been able to do that.
Yeah, yeah, I am curious, just because when we did our discussion of the M. Night movie, I remember you were disappointed. Like, oh, they showed his face. Like, what are they doing that? Do you feel like you feel a similar thing here with this one, or just kind of like, they can do whatever they want?
Was I disappointed in that? I think maybe the first time. I don't know about the second time. Like our first commentary, yeah, on the other channel, I was. But now, like the second time around, I was like, no. It is what it is. Because like, what are they going to do? Like, just keep him in the dark the whole time?
Yeah, I may have been thinking of our first commentary. I think you're right. Yeah.
No. Yeah, I was okay with the change. And same here. It's like, and plus, there was already set photos of him. It's like, how are you going to, like, because we already know what, like, Daniel Day Kim looks like. And he is a handsome man, if I may say so.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, again, of course, also Avatar alum, which is awesome. Played the general in the episode one of book two, if you remember, the crazed general, the maddened general, whatever.
Yeah.
Who believed that, you know, we could weaponize the Avatar state. So it's good to see him again. Yes, I could say he was Hiroshi Sato, but that hasn't happened yet. So, you know, cut that or whatever. Leave it in. I don't care. But it is suddenly spoiled. So, you know, they have to do it that way, and I'm okay with that, because again, maybe similar to the Shyamalan film, potentially we're going to have the Fire Lord be much more of a presence, especially if we're showing him this early on. So he will also be like a significant player of the piece.
Yeah. And again, that could lend some different dynamics, and yeah, well, maybe we'll discuss more of that the next time. But I'll just say, I think he just looks really good as Ozai. I think he captures a great aura, even though we only see him very briefly here. I just like, oh yeah, that fits. I can see that working. But I did want to ask, just since we talked a little bit about Kiyoshi, but we didn't mention the big point that just caught me off guard a little bit, when I wondered, can the past avatars see visions of the future? Because she gives Aang, she's like, oh, let me show you something. Like, if you don't step up to the plate, and then this is going to happen in the north. And she shows him some images of a dark attack to come. And I was like, oh, like this is a bit strange.
Well, I'm not sure, because, I mean, Roku was able to at least project Sozin's comment onto Aang, but he didn't give us like a projection of like, if you don't do this, here's the alternate reality that's going to become reality if you don't, you know, step up to the plate.
Yeah, and that was something that just always came on a semi-regular basis, so.
I don't know. Again, it's maybe them being fast and loose with the series. Nothing on them, but, again, motivation, I guess, for what's to come.
Yeah, and I guess we'll just, something to keep an eye on, see what they do with that as we go along. Oh yeah, I guess there's a couple more notes. I did like, there was a little moment on Zuko's ship where we see kind of his internal struggle a little bit more too, as he starts talking about how he's been following the Avatar for 3 years, and it feels almost worse that now that he's finally found him and he could be so close, that he still hasn't had him. And it makes it, yeah, it almost makes like the pain of it breaking again, like if he manages to not capture him. And I was like, okay, I think they're, again, I think that actor is doing a decent job filling out that role, and I thought that was another solid scene for him. Yeah, I liked the bit where after Sokka's kind of shown that he didn't know what he was doing with Suki quickly beating him, that like the next day or maybe later the same day when she's doing some training, he comes out and he's like standing outside watching. He's trying to do some moves on his own. Then she notices him and she's like, okay, come in, I'll try to show you some moves. And that's kind of the first real flirtation between them. And I thought that was a nice little scene too. And then they, I think, is it that scene when they kiss or is it later?
I think it was later.
Yeah, and then the bell rings and he's like, and she's like, oh, the bell. And he's like, you hear them too? And I was like, wait, was he hearing some wedding bells in that head of his? Was that what he's thinking?
There was a part of me, I don't know if it would have made logical sense. No, it would have. There was a part of me where I was hoping, okay, go with him, go with him, go with him, go with him. And she didn't. I was like, ah, fair enough.
Yeah, I thought that too, actually. I didn't think to mention that. But yeah, I was kind of like, oh, maybe they're really going to change things up and have her introduced for a little while. But I guess maybe we'll see. Maybe she shows up later in the series, or this season, I should say, which I wouldn't mind.
Don't write her off just yet.
And yeah, I guess just a couple more notes. I did like to see a little bit of a Paisho reference with Iroh as they arrive at Kyoshi Island and realize that, oh, Zhao's already here. And Iroh is a way to be like, oh, you know, these kind of situations, it's about the psychology of your opponent, and uses Paisho to try to paint that picture. So I kind of like that little drop in there too. I thought that worked.
I agree.
But I've pretty much come to the end of my notes there for this one.
If there's meat to be left on the table and on the bone, I'm fine. I will let the other critters, vertebrates or non, or invertebrates, excuse me, I will let them, you know, have a taste of it themselves.
Oh, actually, I guess there's one more thing I'll put to you. So at the end, we get that little attack scene as Zhao and his men are attacking the Kyoshi village. And we get Sokka and Suki fighting together a little bit, which I didn't mind there. I thought he was learning those moves a little bit too quick, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But I did note that I was like, oh, this feels like maybe this action scene was actually a little bit more pulled back. Because I think we complained in the last one that was a little bit too quick cut, a little bit too, you know, couldn't really see what they're doing as much. Did you feel maybe this was improved here or not?
It's close to the end of the episode, correct?
Yep.
Again, I don't know, like, I don't want to be a naysayer or anything like that, but at least there's something about when it comes to adapting stuff from shows, or at least trying to portray something really fantastical, that you're going to have to, again, go at it the way, you know, Tokusatsu does it, or again, how Bollywood does it and how like over the top it is. Again, even in like The Matrix. And some of the weight of like the martial arts just doesn't feel there. I don't know why. Like, I don't want to be, you know, completely against it, but it's just like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where, like, I don't believe the kids earn like a victory against an adult.
That's fair.
It's still at the end of the day, like an adult against a, you know, a teenager. And let's just say, personally speaking, like, I know what it's like to hold back against a teenager. I know that sounds rude, but like, that's just kind of how it is.
That's fair. Yeah. Especially with Sokka, because Sokka is not trained at all.
Teens can surprise you, though. They do have a lot of like spunk to them. So like, that's, hey, they can surprise you.
Yeah, maybe a little bit faster, a little bit more wily.
Oh, but they like also have the heart, for pit's sakes. They have the heart. That's what they and these guys have. And but anyway, again, nothing on. Sorry, if I'm getting on. So maybe the next episode we'll talk more about that stuff. But again, that's for another time.
Sure. Yeah, but I guess until then, I guess we're rounding out this episode here. I feel like I don't have much more to say, and I'm ready to close the book on this one.
I suppose, to fulfill your request, not request, sorry, but I guess to suppose to give an answer, a light not feeling it. Not the worst ever, but definitely something that I'd probably skip.
Yeah, and I would say this one brought me a little bit more into the show. I'm still, again, just riding the line of not particularly interested. I'm here for the podcast purposes. If I was to watch it on my own time, just out of being like kind of interested, at this point I would be like, okay, you know, I'll watch it when I get to it, but it wouldn't be something I'd be rushing to finish. So, but I am curious to know what people out there are thinking. If anyone wants to write in, tell us what you think. I'd love to know what the wider world of Avatar fans is thinking about this, because I've still been avoiding reviews or any sort of articles I see or comment sections. I've been trying to stay in that neutral category, not be too influenced by what other people are thinking with it. but yeah, that's all I got for him.
Man, I think it'd be really awesome if, I don't know how they get this, but if Genndy Tartakovsky was able to like direct a episode.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That would be cool.
Closest thing to the crossover I've always wanted.
Oh, but thank you again, Isaac, for joining me once more for some more Benny the Elements. Yeah, again, Korra's still coming, everybody. We're still on our road to Korra again. It's been, I don't know how many months at this point of the road to Korra since we started doing those comics, but we're almost there, sort of.
How many episodes is this? Eight?
Eight, yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. So only 20% there. No, 1/4 the way there.
Oh, but you take us home. Take us out of here.
I miss the Unagi. Because it was cool. I can like shoot jets of water out of its mouth. Till next time. Peace. March 4th to victory. That's the date.
Oh yeah, I guess it is March 4th. I didn't even think about that.
March 4th to victory.
Wow, that's weird. I just realized I forgot my sister's birthday. It was 2 days ago. Oops.
Oh, you know, that's not important at all.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of even forgot that it was March. It feels like ever since I came back from my trip, I've been just lost in what the days
are. Not going to say it. Here's what you're going to do, though. You're going to have to owe her an apology. So instead, what you're going to do is you're going to write her a handwritten letter detailing your apology and her belated birthday, giving her, you know, best wishes and regards and all that other jazz.
I'll be lucky if I remember to text her now.
See, if I was able to just, like, convince you that it was 2025, would you probably believe me?
Well, earlier today, Brianna was like, oh, you know, we're almost halfway through we're getting to the halfway point of the 2020s. And I kind of balked and was like, what are you talking about? I was like, oh, wait a minute, it's 2024. I usually think of the 4 to 6 as the halfway point in a decade.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. That's weird. It really doesn't feel like it, but I guess it is.
Yeah, I'm convincing you that it's like 2020. Actually, no, I'm going to convince you it's 2034, and you'll be me. It's like, wait a minute, then we got to get our, we got to do the Marvel Mania. Like, yeah. what's going there on there? You go.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be starting that up soon. But yeah, I guess, would you like to get this train rolling? I'll grab my little Zuko figure. I might as well have that beside me to give me some strength.
Motivate you. Well, I did open it up. I said March 4th to victory.
Oh, that was your opening. Oh.
Well, I'll just say, I guess I'll say this.
Sure.